This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, here it is. It's 11:05, which means it's time for the weekly mashup. My name is Timmy Shaw, and in the studio with me, I got my girl,
Candace. How are you guys?
How you doing, Candy?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Good.
It's so good to see you today.
So good to see you.
Looking bright, looking beautiful. You were like, eyes. You were like,
what you gonna say? What you gonna say?
White. No, but you're looking like you woke up real early this morning.
I always wake up real early.
You usually do. So what did you get up to this morning? The first thing that you did?
First thing I did is actually meditation.
Okay.
Because it helps me get in the zone for the day.
All right.
And then after meditation, I shower, I have coffee, and I go to gym.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you feel that it's important every morning that when you wake up, you kind of have an intention for what you're going to do during the day, right?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
And it's really important because, well, I suppose in life, you got to live your life intentionally. You got to live with intention, right?
Or else it just carries you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, just life takes over.
Yeah.
But I've been doing a bit of research over the past couple of days. I was feeling like, what is it that is going on in my life that I need to change and I need to fix and get better at, you know? And it just came to me.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading some scriptures.
Okay.
That's what I do first thing in the morning.
Yes.
I try to read something.
To motivate you.
To motivate me, to give me a first thought for the day and carry that thought for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
And I just stumbled across something in the Bible that was quite powerful.
Okay.
So Genesis says that we were created in God's image because God said, let us create man in our own image. What does that mean exactly?
Okay.
We just look like God, or is it even greater than that?
I think it's
something far
greater.
What does God look like? We all look different, right?
Okay, well, we're definitely not looking like God, but I think it's the creative and creation of God. So it's God's intent, you know? So whatever God can do himself, in essence, he has given us that ability and that power.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, right? And I think that if that image is being creative, right, it means that we can create anything that we want, just like God can, because he did say, the first thing he said was, subdue the earth, subdue all the animals in it, and take over, reproduce, just be. And I think that that creative force and that ability to be like God is our ability to create. But how did God create? He created through the word, by what he said.
With his
mouth. And then there's another part of the Bible that says that the tongue is the most powerful part of your entire being, your body.
Oh, yes.
If you can control your tongue, you can even control your body. In other words, 100%. Like, have you seen that movie Lucy?
You keep telling me to watch this movie and never ever.
Scarlett Johansson, right? Where basically she takes this drug and her brain works at 100%.
Yeah.
But imagine if every day you said things that were intentional and that were going in a certain direction. You could not only control your body, you could control the whole
everything.
Of creation. Because I think that the tongue is the most powerful force in the entire universe, the most powerful fuel, anything that you can think of to create. And a lot of the times we say things that are just
so
unintentional.
Reckless.
Like, we're just reckless with our tongue.
But that's the thing. Like, you know, it's like asking someone, have you ever seen, all of us have those people that when you see them from afar, you already want to hide. Because you know you're going to say, how are you? And they're going to be like, today I'm tired.
Yeah,
this broke down. Yeah. This happened. Yeah. Because they're constantly attracting negativity because their mind state and what they say is constantly so negative.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's it, right? Because, like, if you are negative, you are creating your own reality that's going to be negative. I find that a lot of people, you'll talk to them about something, and the first thing they'll reply with is just negativity.
Oh,
or we'll say negative things to ourselves. Oh, you know, I'm not that smart. Oh, I'm so fat. Oh,
yeah.
I'm so this. I'll never make it. I'll never be whatever.
Mm.
But when we say that, then we wonder why we're not.
You're creating your own limitations.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I find that, like, what we've been dealing with from the start of 2016 in this country.
So much negative.
We're going on about all the racism and things like that and blah, blah, blah. But it's really about people not being intentional with their words or being intentional. But not thinking through that, what am I saying and how powerful are the words that I'm saying? And how can I say things that can create a change? I think as humans, a lot of the times, we spoke about this with our sex addiction, where we tend to be negative and we think negativity, if I punish you, then you'll change. If
we
say negative things about you, if I say, Candace, I'm tired of this, you know, you need to change, and you, that's how you'll change. And actually, if I say, Candace, you know, I love the fact that you always wake up so early and you do what you do and such a powerful human being. And I think that, you know, just hanging around you can really enhance my own life. What happens then?
It's very affirming, because then I want to keep doing what I'm doing and I want to keep adding to your life. You know, but as soon as you say, you know what, you're so irritating, you do this, you do that, you do this,
I'm
you do that,
be more irritating.
Then I'm just going to be like, no, because initially it's going to get me down. It's going to be like, why am I so innately irritating? And then after that, I'm going to be like, you know what, I'm going to go through a week where I'm going to try and change the irritation. And then when I realize that, no, I'm not happy not being irritating, then I'm going to amp up the irritation factor. You know,
so. Isn't that like so crazy? Because it's exactly what we do. And then we hope that people change because we said something about them and
we gave them like this awful feedback.
And
we pray that it will snap them.
Like, you must change now that I've given you this negative feedback.
No, but can I tell you,
positive feedback,
sometimes though, you can tell someone from a place of love that they're going on a downward spiral. Sometimes you can't affirm someone's life when they're going in a terrible direction. So that would be in cases of, let's say someone is in an abusive relationship, drug use, whatever. And you say to this person from a loving place though, that, you know what, you are in a bad situation and I think you need to evaluate and change this. Not in a like dictate to the person by saying, you're going to have to change this or I'm leaving. But you just say, you know, I love you, but you are in a very destructive space in your life. You know, because there's no way of dancing around that sometimes.
I suppose you can start with, look, I'm saying that you're in a very destructive place in your life. But then from there, it's like, do the positive. Because like, you can't tell someone what not to do. You can only tell someone what to do. So you can say, I always say like, we operate from a point of a reward system as human beings. So if it makes me feel better to do something positive rather than something negative, I'm going to rather do the positive stuff over and over again.
Because we affirmed.
Because we affirmed, right? Until the positive stuff actually takes over, and after 21 days, it becomes a habit. And I do that like naturally without even thinking about it.
But can I tell you, don't you think that sometimes people, we tend to, we know this on a logical basis. I think the law of attraction or mind power or, you know, what you say and all these things have been subconsciously drilled into us, you know, so we know it on an intellectual level. However, I find that it's application that kills us, you know, because we think to ourselves, you know, I know this, I know this. But then you turn around the next day, you know, and you just say to yourself, I'm having a bad day. Life is so bad.
I know. And we do that as well. I'm having a bad day.
Why am I so unlovable? Why am I? So you beat yourself up about it. And then before you know it, that becomes your speech patterns once again. You know? So it's about not only knowing it, but applying it.
So I've made a decision. For the at least the next 10 days. And 10. I would like you to be my accountability partner.
I shall do that.
So every time we talk or I talk to you. What I say and what comes out of my mouth, which can only grow from what comes out of my mind and my heart and so on and so forth, has to be intentional and has to actually create a reality that is positive in my life as opposed to a reality that is negative. And by that, I mean, I'm going to think more about what I say because I know and I realize, I've always known that I have I have power to create things. I know this. And I even know that when I say negative things to people, I know how powerful my words are. But I also know how powerful my words are when I say positive things. So going forward from this day forth, I will only say things that are positive and powerful and that can create the reality that I want in my life. Starting with the first 10 days. And you have to like call bullshit on this if it's not happening.
I will definitely call bullshit on this.
I trust you because I think you're a very, hardworking person. I know you wake up real early in the morning. I don't know if it's
I love how this has established my credibility.
Or by
though.
Default.
No, I love how the fact that I wake up early has established me as a credible human
being. No, I think that people who wake up early, like, it takes a lot of discipline to do that. It's not something that just happens because I think a lot of people say, no, but I'm a morning person. Yeah, some people are morning people and their body clocks are more in tune to wake up at a certain time and go to sleep at a certain time. But generally, it's about the discipline of every day saying, it doesn't matter how I feel, I'm getting the heck out of bed at this time.
Yeah, there's a saying I follow that says, no matter how you feel, get up, dress up, and show up.
That's right.
So that's for me. I live by that. And no matter how I feel, like I could be dying, like be sick as, I will still put on my makeup. Yeah. I will still put on everything. And I'll still walk out like nothing's happening.
Yeah. You know? I mean, that's so something important. That I live by, actually, a yes. credo that I live by. But, you know, I didn't put it that articulately.
So
succinctly. But it's like, whatever's happening, once I'm here and
yes.
I'm here now,
you got to do it.
Doesn't matter what's happening outside.
The show must go on.
The show must go on. Oh, yes. And I must be here and I must be intentional and I must do what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
And I guess that doesn't just mean like pitching up at work, but
yes.
once I get out of the
life.
House and I wake up, that's a new day and I must just behave in that way.
That's it.
It's not always that easy. Of
no.
course, there are things that bring us down, but I think that when you practice that more and more, you find that things will bring you down, but it won't be for long, and you won't have certain other issues like depression.
Because sometimes it
drags people
like,
do, and dragging other
it
people.
It links, right?
Yeah.
Because you have one bad moment, and then all of a sudden you decide that it's a bad day. Then before you know it, just bad stuff starts happening to you from left, right, and center. And you're like, yeah, I knew this was going to be a bad damn day.
Here it is.
Yeah. And then it becomes a bad week, a bad month, a bad year, a bad life.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Like, no, thank you.
But
let's reverse that.
Yes. Can I tell you the most powerful thing I've learned about myself is that when you, as soon as you take away responsibility and accountability from other people for your happiness, all of a sudden you become a better human being. Just
That's
in
true.
Life, you can create more, you can do more, you're happier. Because if I don't look at you and say, you have to make me happy and you have to make me smile and whatever, then...
That would have been a lot of pressure. Right? I don't know if I'm that good all the time. I mean, you know, I can keep it up for about 30 minutes.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, that kind of decision making, it helps you a lot, you know.
It does. And I think when you make that decision, funny enough, then people generally tend to make you happier, don't they?
True story. Because there's no pressure on them to actually make you happy.
Because already you are happy.
Yeah.
It's like, oh.
It's just like a cherry on top when they make you happy.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
if they don't make you happy, you can just like swipe left, like on Tinder.
Keep going back to Tinder. How often are you on Tinder?
Too often. I'm kidding. I'm really ever on Tinder, but when I am, it's a disaster.
All right. I've been doing some research on those dating sites myself, just checking them out. And I realize that... how do you get dates on those sites, man?
Probably you swipe right and you say
hi. And then you click and then
you
want to
go for coffee
and then
you go
it happens.
For coffee. And then usually most of them want to sleep with you. So you're just like, okay, bye.
But shouldn't people like state that up front if that's what they wanted? So you know when you say, okay, let's meet for coffee, you have the story.
Okay, there's some really honest people on Tinder, I have to say. Like there was a profile that I saw because obviously you get to read a little bio and you see like five pictures that people have selected.
Yeah.
And in this bio, this guy said, I am a married man. I'm 35. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking for a wife.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm looking for someone to pass the time with.
Yeah.
So if you're not judgmental, swipe right.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And so I was like, okay, at least he's honest. Left.
Just a sublift anyway. You were like, actually, you know.
I was like, no, it's not going to work for
on
me.
On certain
left.
Tuesdays, I just want to hang out. What is it? Do Netflix and hang out. You know what it means?
Netflix and chill. That's what
yeah,
it's
you know,
called.
You know
yes,
when someone
exactly.
says, let's do Netflix and chill.
It's chill.
Okay.
No. So that's how it works. And like you sometimes they're really great people. Like I always say, a friend of mine is very successful on Tinder. You know,
what does it mean to be successful on Tinder?
It means you actually find a long-lasting relationship with someone who's not a creep.
Oh, okay. So that's what she's managed to get for
twice.
Herself.
I mean, you know, she's managed to get really cool people.
How
and
long
we
those
meet
relationships
these people.
Last?
One is still going and the other one, ended.
Obviously ended. After how long?
I don't remember how long, but he was a really nice guy.
Okay.
Like she brought him around we liked him.
Oh.
You know, so she doesn't meet completely weirdos. I think I'm just a weirdo magnet sometimes. Talking about words, creating your reality.
It's those eyes.
Because I've got such big eyes, right?
Like
they
that.
Always think I'm looking at them.
All
the
schizos are like, yeah, he's one of us. Okay.
Thank you for that. That is so mean.
All right. Yeah, but talking about words, like we're saying,
yes.
like 2016 has been about people saying things that
reckless things
that I think most of them wish they hadn't said because they ended up apologizing, whether they meant it or not. They realized that they shouldn't have said them because there were real consequences. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to go back to like the Penny Sparrow thing, but it started with that, and it kept snowballing. It just keeps going. Every other week, there's somebody new who says something ridiculous and silly and stupid.
Oh, but it's
And racist.
We're heading towards the middle.
concerned, really, number one. But also I'm surprised that there's so many people who feel this way nowadays in South Africa. I feel like more and more we've kind of all gone into our own separate corners more and more. And there are fewer and fewer people who have a diversity of cultures when it comes to friends and family and so on and so forth that I'm finding.
Yes.
Like, long time ago, 10 years ago, you know, 15 years ago, it was easier. Everyone was like, let's be together. Let's be one big, happy rainbow nation. And nowadays, it's like, has the rainbow nation dream just kind of died, or is it dying a slow death?
I've got a theory. And my theory may not make me popular, but it's just what it is. So from my understanding, this is what I think happened. South Africa was literally thrust into change. There was no bridge period where people could adjust to this new change in their psychology and their belief systems and, you know, how they viewed life.
Yeah.
Literally, Nelson Mandela was released and a few days later you were sitting next to a white colleague, or a white colleague was sitting next to a black colleague, and they went from the day before being able to call you any word they wanted.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden they've got to just smile.
Oh, gosh. That's a big adjustment.
Hey, Jabu. You know, because they didn't even know your name before that.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're forced into this integration. And I think what happened is, for a long time we managed to keep up appearances, you know, like it's like when you're in a bad relationship, you can keep up appearances for so long before it just simmers over.
Yeah.
And I think what happened is all of us managed to like pretend that everything was okay.
Okay.
But when we go home, what we're telling our children,
yeah, and what we're telling ourselves
problem.
And our friends and our family.
Yes. So you keep the circle where you spread this venom, and then it sinks into the subconscious, and then everyone knows that when you're in public, this is how you act. When you're behind closed doors, this is how you act. So a lot of these racist things, you must remember, happened in private conversations.
But there's a thing, right? What is in your heart will one day
just, it has to
just come out, like at the most surprising moment.
We're not wired to be deceitful, and we're not wired to act all the time. You know, so it's not like within our core. You know, as human beings, we're supposed to be open and free. And I think when you act for long enough, eventually it's gonna spill over. And
I think that's what's happening. I mean, I can act for years.
I can hold on
to a character. You know, if I need to, just hold on to a character.
Not everyone is
And doing soaps for so long. I mean, soaps is like an eight-hour day of just hanging on to this character. So after a while, you're like, that's how you do it.
Just,
as long as
you
put on the makeup and you put on the right costume, and you
I
go
disagree.
In there, and then you're just like, woof.
You've got to debrief at a certain period, though,
yeah?
Because you've got your character when you're on set. Then you go home and you're a husband to your wife, and then you leave the house and you take on a different persona. So it's just like different. We learn how to behave in certain circles, and I think that's what's happening now, that some of us are just, or not us, because I'm like so free and loving, but
some of your best friends are white. Hey,
and they are, and I love them to bits,
like,
and they listen
all
two.
Oh, okay. That's,
and then
that's like your number.
Yeah.
That's the cutoff. Sorry.
No.
Okay, the rest of you,
no more.
Thank you.
I love my friends. White or not, they're like my besties.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the thing. So I think at a certain point, people just started just saying what they were feeling inside. And it's so sad, because I feel like the people that are coming out, sometimes we tend to receive it as they're speaking for the whole white race.
Mm.
Like Mabel Jansen or Penny Sparrow. As soon as they make a statement, we like, all white people are like Steve Hoffmeyer.
Yeah.
They've just been hiding it.
I think that's
the
easy thing, because then it also shows your own personal prejudice if you do that, because it's easy to just go,
generalize.
I always knew it. I knew it. These people were thinking
that
anyway. And now one person has said it, so therefore all of you were thinking
disgusting.
It all along. But that means that you yourself then need to work on your own prejudice. Because here's what I always say. I think that in every race group and demographic, there are assholes.
Okay?
It's not
a race specific thing.
It's not specifically just only given to white people or black people or Indian people or colored people, whatever
Chinese.
We're gonna call Chinese people.
Yeah.
It's like there is that bad apple within every race group.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean now you start thinking, okay, because even if I've met a number, like I've met in my entire life, I've only met 20 white people and 19 of them were dicks.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean the other millions and hundreds of millions through my experience were that, right?
But that's when you actually have to be very careful with your wording and your articulation when you decide to make a public statement, because I think all of us have become public figures, you know, through Facebook and Twitter and whatever, because all of us have a voice all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest problem is, as soon as you're a public figure and you decide to put out a statement, and you say, you don't say, according to my experience,
and we don't realize
out of the 20 people I met, that happened to be white. 19 were assholes, yeah. But that one was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, you have to put it in context of your own experience.
But here's the other thing that you just said there. We've all become celebrities in that way, but also we've all become like published.
Yes.
Because once you put it out there, you're published. It's like you've written a book, even if it's like a short 160 character book. But you have been published, and this will be with you for the rest of your life. We can bring it up 30 years from now and say, oh, by the way, now that you're running for this position of CEO, tell us about this thing that you wrote 20 years ago.
What did you say?
Yeah, what did you say?
No,
and we forget that. We think that, I'm just putting this up and it will just go away. You know, people will be ruffled for a bit and will go away. And I think we're all guilty of that sometimes, of forgetting that what we put up is going to be there for the, in fact, after we're gone, it will still probably be there.
Exactly. And I have this rule. If you are angry, upset, or feeling any type of strong emotion, do not go onto a social media site. Just don't do it. Like, call a friend.
I know.
Like, or don't even call a friend. Just go to a friend. Yeah. Rest, then leave.
Because someone might be listening, right?
Yeah, right. And you don't know if you're on speaker, but go to a friend, tell them what you're feeling, and then leave. Yeah. But, you know, it's not...
I'm like that as well. I believe that. I don't always do it, but I know that the temptation to write something when I'm really angry is huge. Whether I'm just like, I'm angry at my wife and I'm like, I'm going to tell the world about you and what you've done to me.
They don't know.
And then I'm going to get sympathy from all my followers, and they're going to be like, oh, how could
sorry,
she treat
friend.
You like that? Mm. Like, you know, and then you realize afterwards, like, oh, man.
Isn't that the problem,
that's
though?
A stupid thing to do, because...
as soon as you make up, then everyone has been invested in the breakup. So now everyone is so unhappy that you're getting back together. Like,
exactly,
how can you go back to this abusive relationship?
Yeah, exactly, I'm hurt because I sat with you for
hours. It was
a
collective effort to get you strong again. You can't go back.
Got you strong to move on, girl. Why are you going back? Anyway, so let's stick to the topic.
Yes.
There's another young man who wrote some...
Matthew Tennyson,
and he's basically a born free, like
he's like my age,
and I'm like, you know, I was born so many years ago, and I kind of lived half of my life
within
and half of my life out, right?
Okay.
And I find that, funny enough, yes, there's still some born frees who are struggling. I mean, not born free, sorry, but people of my generation who are struggling with racism and racial social cohesion and that sort of thing. But for the most part, the kind of people that I went to school with, and I was very fortunate that I went to private schools then, what we called multiracial schools back then. And I guess maybe they weren't as, the stress and the pressures weren't as great as, I suppose, a Model C school, where suddenly it's like the real demographics of South Africa are right there in your school, where it's predominantly now suddenly a black school. I mean, it was black people were in the minority, I guess. So maybe white people felt a little bit more at home and cool with us and stuff. And it was about assimilation. You couldn't go there and hold on to your own culture, language, anything about yourself. You had to like kind of give that up to be there. Be that as it may, that could have caused me to be bitter or whatever. But I feel that in spite of that, because we were kids growing up and we were in this environment where we had so much hope, and this represented an oasis, an island of hope. I mean, when I was in primary school, right outside my school, there was a bench, bus stop bench, that said Ned Blankets. And for the longest time, I didn't understand what that word meant. I was like, only blankets? Or is that an Afrikaans way of saying only black people?
Yes.
And no, it was actually the very opposite. Yes. And you had issues like, if you go on a cricket tour now, you know, the school's booked a train ride. And in the old days, it wasn't like, nah, just get on a train. It was like, there's first class, which is only white.
Yes.
Second class, just kind of mixed, and third class is like for the rest of the darkies. And people, like a friend of mine was playing first team cricket, and they'd go on cricket tours, and it was like always an issue. Like, didn't they realize that this would be an issue? Like, we get to the station and it's like, oh shucks,
what do we do with you?
What are we gonna do? But be that as it may, we kind of were very hopeful, and we grew up with that, and was, you know, into my adulthood and even up to now, some of my best friends are white. I'd say that in any racist way, but just, it's like, it is what it is. It's like, interject.
Yes. I think, you know, the biggest thing right now, especially, I think all of us are scared to just say like what you just said. Like, my best friends are white. Like, it's not a scary notion to make, but it's a controversial. It's become so controversial. Stating facts has become so controversial. And I think for me, the biggest thing is just acknowledge that because we are different people, and society has created it this way, that because we are different, we can have different life experiences. Like, for example, a study came out that black women are still the minority in management, and they still they find it the hardest to actually get employment. Mm. And I think as soon as people start like saying, "Well, we are equal now, and South Africa's changed," blah blah blah, then they fail to acknowledge your struggle as a black woman trying to get employment. Yeah.
That's the thing, isn't it?
So it's just about acknowledging that yes, because this person is of a different race or nationality, they are experiencing different struggles to what I am, without making it this thing like stop being a victim, stop letting the race card, blah blah blah. You know, just understanding.
I think what it is people have become impatient with the rate of the progress economically and the real freedom of our people. Black and white, and I think where liberal or non-racist white people and even black people in certain groups are finding it difficult is being able to keep saying 20 years down the line, we understand that this is still happening, we will in our own spaces do more, as opposed to just saying that they're like exhausted and people are saying, I can't believe we're still dealing with this. You know, when will you get over it, or when will this stop happening? And I think it's that sense of, like, if you have a friend in an abusive relationship and you're like, you know, friend, we've been praying for 20 years and this guy is not changing. Like, just leave, for goodness sake, you know, and you can't. Like, we can't leave each other. We all need each other and we're not realizing that. And it's more about people just going, you know what, guys, there's still so much more to be done.
And very young.
And this whole notion, what we've realized with BEE and affirmative action is you cannot legislate love.
Yes.
You cannot legislate the right thing to do.
Yeah.
People have to want to do it. However, there have to be consequences when people fail to do the right thing.
I agree.
Which is, I look around me at all my associates when it comes to business.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people I do business with, there's a very healthy mix of people. I have a lot of white male friends who are my age, which should make them middle age, but they're my business partners. Yeah. I've known them for almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a no-brainer. They are good at what they do. I'm good at what I do. We're great friends. Let's get together and just do this thing.
Yeah.
And that, in a way, is actually BEE. In fact, not in a way, it's exactly BEE, because we're all sharing in the equity and we're all going to share in whatever comes out of it.
Yeah.
Except we seem to forget now, when we go into other businesses, that the most important relationship is not the business one, what I can get out of you because of your skin color or even just your expertise, but what we can do together because we have a common purpose and a common vision and we actually like hanging out with each other.
That's it. I think and sometimes it even goes beyond liking. I think it's about respect.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, as long as you have a mutual respect for one another, I think then there's no reason why your business relationship can't work. But as soon as you view the other person as less than because of you feel like you need this person to be raise your BEE status, whatever, I think that's where things really start getting messed up, you know. People you putting in placeholders, really, you know, instead of real change agents or someone that deserves the position. Because you can't tell me that there aren't educated, responsible, well-trained black people to take over some of these positions that aren't being filled by those kind of people.
But I suppose that's what racism for me is, when you think to yourself, I can't find those people unless it's one of those BEE setups. Like, we just, you know, just to fill the box, just to tick the right boxes, we need a black female.
Yeah.
So who do you know? Oh, yes, I know this girl named Tandy. She's cool. Okay, let's just put her in.
Yeah.
As opposed to, let's just get to know a couple of people who can actually be part of this
value.
Thing and add value. And let's just work with them. Yeah. And I think that for me is where I have a problem with that whole thing. Because then I think you're really not trying. What you're doing is, like you said, you're just using placeholders, because it's not that hard, really. It's not.
Can I say something though? I think the one thing that I find that South Africans, all of us, we forget is that what South Africa has done in the past 20 years is unheard of around the world. That is why every country in the world admires us so much, because a lot of the countries, especially in Africa, that have been you know, colonized and have gotten their freedom. They like went completely opposite. They said all white people out. We are starting over. Zim is the biggest example. Whereas we are like a beta country in a sense. You know,
we're the test country.
We are the test country. We don't know if this thing is actually working. We don't know if it is gonna work. We don't know how this whole thing, you know, is structured, because we don't have a role model to show us that this is the way forward.
I mean, it's never worked in the Western countries.
It's never worked around the world. So we are
in the States. It clearly hasn't worked in the UK.
We're the last man standing, really.
We are the last man standing.
And we're trying to make it work, and we're trying to figure it out. And
so I guess people now are just, some people are either getting impatient, or what they keep saying to themselves, their internal story is coming out.
Yes.
So going back to the judge, the High Court judge.
Yes.
It's interesting that she was given her position as the High Court judge in 2013 by our very own president, Jacob Zuma, who happens to be a black man who himself has been in trouble with the law for rape and that sort of thing. And just to put it in context, what she said when she put something up on Twitter was basically that all black men just see women as
objects
that they can use. And they pretty much, it's in their culture to rape. Which is
and most black women have been molested by family.
Yeah, which is quite a serious thing for someone who's in the high court to be the judge, because she'll come across those sort of cases. So
all
it's like she cannot be in that position. Actually, she's just by saying those things, she just proved to us that actually you cannot be in that position because if I'm on trial, I'm screwed she's the judge. I'm going down.
A judge, or the biggest credential in my mind to appoint a judge, is impartiality. The fact that you are not like the rest of us layman folk sitting at home judging, you know, pointing fingers. You are above us morality wise and you can be impartial and look at the facts of a case and just judge
intellectually,
based on that.
Every spiritually, every sphere,
it's like a
emotionally
pasta,
you know,
there's just a different league that you are in that the rest of us don't play in.
You meditate for longer.
And I think as soon as you bring your own personal prejudice and bias into any case, because all of us become lazy and we become complacent and we start skimming over documents. We don't look at the facts of a document. Be like, this seems like a normal case of just rape another black man. Obviously he did it. You know. So how many people did you falsely accuse without actually looking at the evidence?
I'm like, wow.
It scares me for my brothers. I mean, it's really scary for me.
Yeah, man. Sure. Yeah, ne?
It's sad. And I think when you read the exchange, she's just, you know, the fact that she keeps hammering on it. And I think the biggest thing that people fail to see, and this makes me really mad, is that people say, well, she was stating facts, you know. So I said, can I just say that?
Why would people say that?
No. She was stating facts because obviously what she has seen within her career. So I said the one thing people fail to understand is that we are living in Africa. Africa is a African country. It's a black country. It's a black continent, excuse me. And South Africa has got, in 2011, we had 79.2% African population, black people. And that's 2011. So if the majority of a country...
How many percent, say that again?
79.2% in 2011. Yeah. So we are the majority. So of course, in any country, it's like going to China and saying that all Chinese people are molesters and criminals because all you see are Chinese people.
Yeah. So it's like going to America and doing the same thing and saying all white men are criminals.
And pedophiles.
And pedophiles.
Because that's the majority of that country. So
or
the majority,
serial killers, because the majority of serial killers in the States seems to be white men, right?
So why do we always throw out the statistics as soon as they actually become relevant to a particular topic? And then we use statistics when it benefits us. So yes, I get what you're saying in terms of in her courtroom, from her experience, this is what she has seen. But to put it as a blanket statement for all black people, and then some people coming to her defense and saying, well, it's accurate. I think, that's where it throws me off.
It concerns me that then people come to her defense and say it's accurate, because I don't know if those people are themselves black men, generally.
There was a particular status I did see from a black man who was defending her. And
one
he was
out of the rest.
One. And I think all of us
the majority were.
Because if we take out the statistic that 80% of our population is black, then then it could be accurate in her interpretation of the law and from the cases she has seen. But why isn't she putting that out there? Why are you making a blanket statement for all men?
For me, it shows a lack of not only wisdom but maturity on her part.
Goodness.
And you can't be a high court judge if you don't have a certain
maturity.
Level of maturity, because she didn't take that into account. She didn't think.
No,
she doesn't think
that's
on
it.
A day-to-day basis, like what you just thought now.
How could you, as a person, and this, it goes back to each and every one of us, have become social figures, public figures, we publish, and how can you become a high court judge and not understand that anything you put out there, you know, is bound to get out? If you're going to put it in a text format where there's evidence of the things you have said, it is bound to get out.
Like, how could you not have the foresight to realize that If it's on social media, it's on Twitter, it means that you're no longer controlling it. If it's on WhatsApp, you're no longer controlling it. If it's written in black and white and you sent it as an email, on a letter, it's your word.
Pigeon format, whatever.
Someone can just turn around and say, actually, I'm just going to put that out there. And this is the person that we're dealing with, people. Even if it was your best friend. Like you said, rather go and see your best friend in person.
That's it. My best friend knows. My best friend knows this. When I send him a text and I say, I need to see you, he knows it's real. We will make a coffee date.
Yes.
We will sit down. We will discuss. If we have to refer back to the incident I spoke about verbally, we will start using code.
If he turns against you one day, he's like, Candace, don't think that she's what she is. You're like,
He can completely turn against me, and I'll be like, okay, cool, produce our WhatsApps.
Show us
on Facebook. Like,
what proof is there? Obviously, he's disgruntled because I friend zoned him for so many years, and he's starting to get upset.
Wow, okay, moving along.
That
is so hard.
Book friend zone.
Anyway.
I don't want to be that guy in your life, Candace. Just putting it out there.
Friend zoned already.
Right,
sorry.
Right. It's fine. You know what? I'm just that guy that will meet in the mall and say hello. And occasionally, like when we have to do the show, we'll talk. But don't call me with your personal problems about your man, okay? And expect me to be the shoulder to cry on unless there's something in it for me. I'm just putting it out there. This is on a public platform.
Actually, can I just say this? Because it's funny you should bring it up.
Oh, okay.
I'm actually tired of men making it seem like the friend zone is some prison and it is some punishment for the lack of the, for lacking, let's say,
sex
for
appeal?
Me not wanting to sleep with you. Like, why am I being punished for not wanting to sleep with you as a friend and saying, I like you as a friend, I like you as a human being, and I enjoy our conversations. You should like me as a friend. You should
like
me as
a human
being.
I just don't
like
you enough to sleep with you.
Yeah, no, something like that. But I mean, that's my choice. Why am I being punished
for
my choice?
No, no one's punishing you. It's like, that's purgatory. That's like male purgatory because you are in a situation where you're not going forward. So basically what it is this guy clearly has spoken about his intentions before he was friend zoned. And he's hoping that at some point you'll change your mind, which is actually on his part, I think, quite immature and silly.
I think so.
At that point, you should decide, okay, clearly things have changed. So I have to like put that away. And, well, you know, there's that 1% chance that one day we'll get drunk and you'll tell me about your problems. I'll be your shoulder to cry on. And who knows what it could lead to. Maybe it's a beautiful when Harry met Sally kind of story, you know. We'll realize 20 years down the line after 5 failed marriages that we were the ones. And then we'll be together. But nonetheless, in the meantime, I have to make a conscious decision that if I'm going to continue with this, I have to no longer see you as that person who I find attractive. Like, she's pretty, but so what?
Yeah, you know what I mean? The thing, though. You have to kind of compartmentalize. Like in life, we all have to compartmentalize.
Things I don't want to sleep with my male friends.
You don't want to sleep with your male friends.
Yeah. Why does that sound so like you didn't know this before?
I always thought you were fluid, but it's okay.
Really? What about me gave you that impression exactly?
I'm just saying. So
I don't know. Should I take that as a compliment? Is that a nice thing to say in this day and age? Because nowadays, it's a cool thing, you know.
I think so. That you're that open-minded. That
no, I'm not.
Willing to be fluid. But I mean,
no, I'm not. Really.
It's fine. You put it out on. It's on air. Don't worry.
It's published. They can make a transcript of this.
No, but I mean, at the end of the day, I just think women shouldn't have to be punished because we do not foresee a future with someone, yet we enjoy your company enough, you know.
But no one said. I don't think men are saying that there's a punishment.
It's
basically like I hear you and I respect your decision to friend zone me, but I think to make it
it's like prison. It's like
it's purgatory. I told you, but to make it easier for both of us, I think it's best that we cease and desist on this make-believe relationship of friendship, and rather we'll just see each other when we see each other. We'll be like acquaintances. Like, yeah, we know each other. I might like something that you put up on your Facebook status. I might comment on your Instagram page.
I'm like reevaluating all my friendships now. I'm going through my phone. Like, if anyone is listening out there that believes I've friend zoned them, send me a text. Let's end this now.
Oh my gosh.
Rather end it now.
Your phone is going to be like, it's going to be
a hotline bling.
Yeah, it's going to be a hotline bling. You know what I'm saying?
Just let me know now. Forever hold your peace.
I'm like, when I start a relationship with a woman, if there's that thing of friend zoning, I give it no more than a month.
Okay.
After that month of clearly she wasn't just joking. She didn't want to just see if I was for real.
Yeah.
This is a real friend zone situation. I'm like, cool, you know. I'm going to move on because it's just going to make it difficult with my next relationship when I've actually found the one, because clearly you were not that one. And now she's going to be like, so who's this Candace exactly? No, she's just a good friend of mine. And then, like, we should go out to dinner with her. And, like, we're having a good time and we're laughing and it's so wonderful. And we have in jokes and we know each other so well. And this other person is like, yeah, ne.
No. Even female friends. No. Female friends, we understand our boundaries. Like, if I go out with you and your date or you and your whatever, I understand my boundaries. There's certain things that I need to understand. Like, okay, these are the dynamics. You don't try and become the main woman. You're just like, okay, cool, you know. Just watch the other woman and say, friend, you know, she looks a little like she's been around the block. I don't know. I wouldn't invest my heart in it if I were you. And then you just give your outsider's opinion. Then you move along.
You see, you got too much inside opinion as women. You got too much inside insight.
Because we care. Because women are intuitive and men aren't.
I'd rather hear it from my guy friends.
No. Because then I'm like, men are not intuitive. Like, someone in my life, I will not name their name, but they were dating someone.
Don't name and shame.
I will not name and
like
shame.
Like, we're so moved from Mabel. And this like, person, sorry, Mabel. Like, you're just not worth it. Like, yeah, we're done. Yeah.
We're just like, waste of air.
Yeah.
But so she was dating this particular person.
Uh-huh.
And I knew that this girl knew too much information. So we would call. About this individual. Okay. So I would call this person and it would divert me to her. So then I texted him and I said, look, you know, it's so funny. I think, you know, you're at home or something because, you know, I tried to get and it went there. They're like, no, I've got my phone on me. Try again. So I tried again and it went through. So I was like, no, that was just funny. So then it happened to someone else in my life. And I was like, you also got to her? You also? And I was like,
how long were they together?
This chickie isn't like, you know, is doing some CIA-ish because I don't even have that software.
No, man. That's like wrong.
Yeah. And like, she would do.
I'm so upset right now.
She would do certain things. She would do certain things that I could tell as a woman. Like, oh, cray cray. Oh, yeah, she crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't tell a man.
It's a ticking time bomb.
You can't be honest with men because men get so in their feelings. Like, I can tell my girlfriends anything, but my guy friends, I'm just like, he's going to get so in his feelings about this because I'm detecting this.
Because actually what happened is we assumed that you friend zoned me because you were like, I don't know, you know, let someone else try him out for a bit. And then now that I'm happy, you're like, actually,
no.
I want him back.
No.
They're like, no, it's too late now. I'm trying to be happy.
No.
I know she's like crazy. But
no.
Like, help,
no, no,
just
no.
Let me be happy.
No, you can be happy with crazy. All we're saying is that you might be broke after crazy leaves. That's all we're saying.
And broken.
Yeah, broke and broken. That's it, you know. So we try, as female friends, our duty is just to look out for you. It's like looking out for our brothers. We don't want these crazy girls sometimes coming in here and destroying a happy person and replacing it with a broken person. That
but here's the
to
thing, right?
With.
Sometimes it's hard to trust that because
trust what
the opinion of your female friends, the concern, because sometimes I think the relationships kind of get muddy. So I remember I once had a female friend, and I'm not sure what was happening because there was like a little bit of physical stuff that had ensued.
Okay.
But it was like, I'm not sure what's going on because, I mean, she was with another guy.
Okay.
And it was like, are we waiting for you to figure out who you want to be
where
with?
Where you are,
or are you with me? Because, like, it seemed like, it was like kind of anything could happen at any time because we had crossed certain boundaries, right? Then I meet the love of my life, my wife now, and she, the first thing she said is, she's Xhosa. I can't. If you're going to go out with a Xhosa woman, then we can't be friends. And I wanted to hear her out, but I couldn't because I was like, from whence is this coming from? Is it one of those
jealousy
is it jealousy
like
or are you genuinely concerned about the integrity of Xhosa women in general? Because it was like, okay, you can't kind of half friend zone me and then then say something about that's what I'm talking about.
No, because from my understanding, trust me, if you have been friend zoned, and I'm sorry if you feel like disgruntled, take it up with Mabel Jansen.
All the people who are listening now, all the men who've been friend zoned by Candace and are listening now, if you're disgruntled, it's okay. We're going to set up
a support group
and a Facebook page.
Yes, and you guys can have like an AA anonymous for me. So I feel like when I friend zoned you, trust me, that is not changing. Like,
okay.
I'm just that stubborn. It's just the way I'm created. Yeah. It's the way I'm built. Like, I don't see you that way. Like, literally, I've got two brothers and you become brother material. You just in that box now.
Okay.
So when I give you advice, I sincerely, genuinely mean it. I'm just like, okay, friend, like, go try out the Shark Tank. I know how men love danger. Go on. I will be here when she's like done with you.
Yeah.
And I get it. A lot of women, I feel like when guy friends introduce me to their new girlfriends, the girlfriend immediately doesn't like me. So I never meet them anymore. I'm just like, okay, don't introduce me until it's serious.
But isn't that the thing though? I mean, how many people have managed to create a successful relationship with their girl or guy friends, and they're invited to the wedding and on and on, and everything's just wonderful, and we're friends for life, and you know, we raise kids together and things like that. Because I find that as friends, when it's very rare that we're at the same place at the same time in our life, right? So you might be my
female friend, yes,
and then you meet this amazing guy, and then like things move along, and I'm still like, yo, I'm having a great time, I'm having a ball, I'm not ready for commitment,
you know. So
every
I'm
now and again,
stage.
Like we might party together and stuff, and then you get married, and I'm there, you know, I give a speech, it was wonderful, but there's something about it that maybe your partner at some point will be like, I don't know about this guy friend of yours, you know, until he's in the same situation that we're in, like it should come to an end, because I can't.
No, but I think, okay, I'll address that. And I also think that with female friends as well, you don't grow at the same pace. There are times when you have to give your female friends room to breathe, and especially when it's a new relationship. I think across the board, any friend, gay, straight, trans, whatever, when they find new love, all they can think of and all they want to do is spend time with that person. So you have to respect that. You can't be bitter about it. Like, I'm single, I haven't found no one. Now you have to spend time.
Now you know it to be found,
no,
friend.
No, like, let them
You're
go.
Always together.
6 months, a year, whatever. Let them have their time and they'll come back to you. Trust me, they always come back to you. They're like, oh, friend, it's not working out like I thought it would.
Oh, you know, so that's the only comeback, when it's not working
or
out?
Or even if it's happy, whatever it is. But, you know, they'll come back because now their life is balanced. The guy's no longer on a cloud or whatever.
Yeah, that pedestal. He's kind of just come off that. You chop that pedestal down.
But at the end of the day, I think with friendships, they grow at different paces anyway. So it's not about a guy friend, girlfriend, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm so sick and tired of, like, just being guilted for this friend zoning thing. I think it's disgusting. I feel like all women face the same struggle.
You know, I really hope that it gets better for you, but I'm
I
like,
do hope
yeah,
so.
Okay. Haven't I heard this before?
No, but I think all women experience the
Stop
same thing.
Being a victim.
I'm a victim of men who think I've friend zoned them, and I'm sick of
and
of
their
it.
Girlfriends when they find them who are like, that was never a friend.
No,
she wasn't sure if she wanted you, and now she does, because you're so happy with me and she doesn't want you to actually be happy. You need to let go of Candace and never talk
that's
to her again.
That's the next thing, actually. That's what I wanted to
and
address.
It's very awkward.
That's what I wanted to address. The fact that, okay, any woman in general or men in general, I think as soon as you start a new relationship with someone, you're so scared that someone else might take them away from you, that your insecurities start playing games with you.
That's so crazy.
So they're like,
so
no, don't talk to that girl. She likes you. And you can be the nicest. You can be in
But women do that more than men. I mean,
the
I know
women
that.
Women do tend to do
I know that there are men who are insecure about their women's guy friends. But I'm always like, you know what, yo, dog. If that's your
Can
best
I
friend,
tell you something?
like be that, do you, boo. And if it turns out that you guys were doing some stuff behind my back, you know what? There's a special place in hell for the both of you. Enjoy.
Please don't burn me, woman. But there's...
There was an incident.
No, there wasn't an incident. But, I do understand with women why we tend to act a little crazier when a guy's
Why?
Can I tell you? Okay, can I tell you?
Yeah,
because with women are so competitive naturally. Everyone's like, men are so competitive. Women are competitive, trust me. So what happens with a woman is, that's why I always say to you, I'm like, I am the best wing woman. Reason being, I'm not saying I'm so hot, but reason being that if you are different looking,
that's not why I want you to be my wing woman.
No. Can
like
I tell you
you're gonna
why?
Bring hot chicks
exactly,
this way. Not that you are hot. I don't care.
No, exactly. So what women do is they benchmark themselves against the woman currently in your life. So if they feel that if they feel inferior or superior, they're gonna be like, why is she sticking around? And I, you know, so they're either drawn to you for that reason. So if I get involved, right, in a relationship with someone, and I meet that guy's girlfriend, like the best girlfriend, I already know, like, how she's going to judge me, because I'm going to come in my, like, heels, I'm going to be taller than, I'm going to be a giraffe, I'm going to have green hair. Yeah, so she's already like, where do I start with competition right now? Because she's so crazy looking.
Yeah.
And then after that, they're going to be like, oh, wait, she's interested. So wait, have I been missing something with this guy all along? So then they start reevaluating the guy. Then they're like, wait, if she wants you, then maybe I've been missing some things.
But she just said she doesn't want me. I told you that she doesn't want me.
No.
And it's not even about whether she wants me or not. I just like her company. She's really cool.
And
she's, and yes, she is attractive. And you know, I like to look at her.
Because a woman.
And like, I don't want to be around her if she's not attractive. Heck, but that doesn't mean I want to sleep with her. What am I saying?
That's the thing. Woman, your currency or reality value as a man goes up when another attractive woman is in your, like, if another woman wants you, then woman,
but she doesn't want me.
No, I'm saying the friend zone. Look, so no. So this is how the friend zone works. Let me simplify
please.
Not the friend zone. I'm not getting it. Woman thing.
Talk to me like I'm a 6-year-old.
Okay, I am gonna break it down for you. So what happens is when John meets Sally. No. So you are now in a friend zone situation, mm-hmm. right? So you have been friend zoned by Lucy. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Then you meet a new girl.
Yes.
Let's say you meet me, right? No, so then you say to me, because all men like doing that, I need to introduce you to Lucy. You guys would get along so well.
She's amazing.
So, exactly. Lucy's so funny. She's so smart. Crazy. You know, she's not even my type, but hey, yeah. She's amazing.
Like,
you'll
we've had amazing nights together. Like exactly. That one time we got totally drunk.
No, you don't even need to elaborate.
And end up in that hotel room. And it was like, wow, we woke up the next day.
You don't even need to elaborate to a female. Like, if you're about to date someone, you don't even need to elaborate on that, because men naturally don't elaborate when they're with a girlfriend.
You're trying not to tell that kind of truth, because you're like, I don't want to mess this up.
Exactly.
So telling you that Lucy and I spent that night together.
Right. So then you'll just say like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then so now I'm the one that now is your dating potential. So you want me to meet Lucy. So I come into the picture and Lucy looks at me and says, okay, maybe she's attractive. She's attractive-ish. Wait, she is funny. Wait. So Lucy starts taking all my good points and she's like, no, why does she want him? I don't get it. If she's like, let's say Lucy says she's a 7. She's a 7 out of 10. Why would a 7 want him? And then Lucy all of a sudden starts rethinking her space in your life. And she's like, no. I don't like Candace. And the reason I don't like Candace is because, like, she'll come up with different things. But inside, Lucy's just thinking. She's reevaluating who you are as a man. And she's thinking, do I actually want to take him out of the friend zone? Yes, no, maybe. And then that's why women don't like other women.
Actually, once you have a real woman in your life, then the friend zone thing changes, because she's might.
With a lot of women, it tends to do so.
Guys, can we just keep it simple? I'm going to say it like this. If I'm your friend as a man,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Chances are, at some point in our relationship, I want to tap that.
Yeah.
I want to be honest.
You're going to try it from the beginning.
To the rest of our lives. We're going to be 80 years old.
Hopefully not, but yes.
And I'm still going to be like, you know what? Just as an experience before I die, can I just tap it and go? But it's like, doesn't have to change our friendship. Like, you can still be, we can still be friends. You can still carry on with your relationship, and it's fine. Nonetheless, that doesn't mean when you find happiness and joy, I won't be like, yeah, I'd like to be friends with your man. I'd like to be, like, when you invite me over to the house for a brow, I'm not going to act weird. I'm going to sit with him by the brow, stand around with him with my beer, and we're going to laugh and talk about the rugby and talk about relationships. And it's going to get real. And if you ask me for advice on Candace, I'm going to be like, well, you know, what I found is she's like this and like that. She's generally a nice person, but I think she is a little bit crazy, because I know my friend. So, you know, just be cool with that,
that she's crazy.
And learn how to deal with it, my friend, because now you are actually more my friend than she is.
No. Can I tell you something? Wrong.
And heck,
can I say, you
know
why?
You're damn attractive. Like, she's done good.
No.
Look at you with your 6-pack and your 20 million rand house. Damn.
No, can I tell you something? No, the reason it never works when friends sleep together or whatever the case is, when that boundary gets crossed, can I tell you why? Men invest time in you, in your friendship. Yes. Hmm. So, in closing, guys, men invest time in your friendship for the pure reason that they're hoping to get what they want. If they get what they want, they stop investing that time in the friendship, because they're like, why should I call her 24? Why am I listening to her life dramas? They start reevaluating, and men always pretend they don't have that switch in their mind. Like, I've won, I've won. Ouch.
I'm going to hit myself.
I've won. And then it stops becoming a game for them. So they stop actually being present in the friendship.
I think that maybe, like, you're being a racist, because you've taken like a couple of men, and there's one right in front of you who's like really quite normal. Like, whether I hit it or I don't hit it, it's like, I don't care. It's like, if I like your company, I like your company.
Yeah.
And that's that. Just don't be weird about it either.
Yeah.
Like, there'll be times when I can't be around you because, like, I'm doing other things, or I'm doing other people. So don't make it weird either. But at the end of the day,
it's just a safe zone. Yeah, I think everyone should appreciate it.
I give you a chance.
I'm like,
So all I'm saying is, like, I am happy for you, friend, if you meet the guy, you know? Like, now you're really happy. Like, he's a really good-looking guy. So when we go out together, like, I know he's married to you. So I'm the single guy. I'm gonna eat off his good-lookingness, right? And the fact that he's so rich, I get to experience stuff. Like, I get to swim in your Nkandla pool for 2.6 million. Sometimes you take me on holiday with you overseas and I get to be on your yacht. Like, this is great.
Thanks for all this amazing life projection.
We've done it. We've made it, friend. We've made it together. And I want you to be happy. I'm going to work hard to make sure that you stay. Like, if you start doing crazy stuff, I'm gonna reprimand you. Like, Candace,
I'm not compromising this yacht.
Think about me for a bit. I enjoy driving this Porsche. So you better stop.
Wow, okay? That was a fun
and that's that, that's it from me. So
bye, guys.
So if you're gonna friend zone me and you're gonna get I'm gonna make sure my responsibility, I'm gonna make sure you get the most incredible guy out there.
It is now published
because it's our life. It's my life too, Candy.
Okay, bye,
guys. I want to drive a Lamborghini. Ciao.
This is cliffcentral.com.